Hello and welcome to Down the Slope. By popular demand, by that I mean Greg asking me to come back last week and, well, Liam not being really that arsed. I'm back hosting, and I was probably the only person that made it that late into the pod last week. It was absolute clusterfuck. No, I'm joking. I really enjoyed listening to it. There is only the three of us again. Greg's not feeling too great. Harry, how you doing, mate?
Being honest, I'm just looking forward to next Sunday being over. Obviously, we've got quite a fun Sunday plan, and I'm looking forward to a break from Hibs. Honestly, the first time in my life, I thought to myself, you know what, I could do with Hibs not playing week in, week out, because I've started dreading games, to be honest, Jim. And you ken the rules. If Hibs are pish, that's how I'm going.
Yeah. Liam, obviously, Harry was down in London. We made the trip to Easter Road on Saturday. Just how excited were you on Saturday morning?
Just on your opening point about the podcast, I haven't listened back to last week's podcast. I can confirm that it is absolutely shite. anyway, I was looking forward to it. I was actually really looking forward to coming Saturday, to be honest. Not to be too contrary, but it's just been so long since we'd been at Easter Road. And I was like, went for 3 pints before the game. 3 pints is enough for me, if it's strong enough alcohol for me to properly get into the mood, get into the spirit. So I was very much looking forward to the game on Saturday morning.
Yeah, I wasn't in my season ticket seat. I sat with my sister in my mum's season ticket seat because my mum was working on Saturday, so she couldn't make it. So I've not been in my season ticket seat for long enough. And just before kickoff, my sister was like, I don't think I've been here since the Dundee United game. I was like, Erin, none of us have been here since the Dundee United game. But it felt that long. Like she thought she'd missed games or something. So, Aberdeen. It was not great, let's be honest. You know, like it wasn't great. But starting 11, there was a couple of changes. Obviously, Ryan Porteous came back in. James Scott did start against Livingston, so he dropped out. Melkerson was up top on his own. Josh Campbell came in as well, and Josh Campbell looked to be sort of the him and Henderson sort of almost like a Sean Maloney 3-4-3. Did you think, Liam?
It was a wee bit Maloney-esque to begin with. Sort of personnel-wise, was quite a sort of Sean Maloney-esque team as well. It was quite interesting to see us sort of revert back to that after obviously a disappointing result last weekend. We've looked to try and address that by changing system and go a bit more sort of 3-4-3/3-5-2. I must say, and I know I've said this a few times in the pod, I sometimes really struggle with being able to understand when we've got like a one in behind a two or whether it's a three, because it does feel quite fluid at times. But my point was it was a definite change of system and a definite change of personnel after last week, which probably understandable.
Yeah, Harry, after last week's game at Livingston, it was a bit turgid in West Lothian. The first half wasn't all that much better this week. It was an interesting start to the game, though. Obviously, inside a couple of minutes, a free kick on the byline got taken from the 6-yard box. Did you expect Hibs to score from that? Because I certainly didn't.
Nah, the thing is, like, I like unadulterated carnage for no reason at all. I think that those types of free kicks should be given more often. Like, whether it should be or not from the referee's perspective, they definitely should, because I just think it's funny watching Ryan Porteous be nominated as set piece taker to blooter the ball as hard as he can. I definitely knew for a fact he wasn't going to score, because there was about 3 yards between him and the nearest man. By the time the ball was kicked, they were all on the ball anyway. Those are very difficult situations to score from, but I think it's still funny seeing about 12 men on the line. It's always a good laugh.
See, with these sort of scenarios, I was saying to my sister, and I was like, I think we're going to make a rip-roaring cunt of this. Like, you know, like, we're going to... And I can't make my mind up if just hitting it is the best thing to do, or trying to be a little bit clever is the best thing to do in these situations. Like, I think when it's Hibs, just hit it, because we're liable to fuck up. Try to play a pass, we'll probably lay it back to... Like, I was even worried about Joe Neal's pass back to Ryan Porteous. I was like, he's going to hit it too hard or something. He's going to have to take a touch. Like, Liam, would you have liked to see in that instance, especially when there's nothing on the game, maybe a little bit of creativity in that scenario?
Always. I think it's one of those ones where I can definitely count on one hand actually the number of times I've seen a team score from an indirect free kick live at a game or on TV. There are not many that spring to mind. And the difficulty with you do something really innovative and it doesn't come off, you get even more of a
short corner, isn't it?
Roasting. So my thing with that would be try and change the point of attack. So like it goes into someone and then there's another pass that then takes it out the way or goes in the opposite direction or something just to move stuff around. Because that whole pass it back and smash it, like you do think like laws of science that surely they can't cover the whole goal and it gives you a chance of scoring, but you never ever see goals from it.
Pretty pristine as well to find that point.
It does. And like just generally with Porteous, he's obviously, you know, he's come back in the team, he's quite a confident guy. He's probably saying to himself, I know I've seen 100 people do this before, but I'm confident in my own ability, so I'm just going to do what I've seen 100 people do before and it'll work for me for some reason. And it didn't.
And you know, Ryan Porteous against Aberdeen, there's always something. It's either a goal or a red card, so there was a chance to, and I'm thinking he scored up at Pittodrie under Heckenbottom, scored obviously Maloney's first game.
A retrospective red card
up at Pittodrie there. It's probably good odds on Ryan Porteous doing something. I don't think you predicted Ryan Porteous to score last week for the first time this season.
Just before we move on from the indirect free kick, I reckon a fun tactic would have been just let Ryan Port just kick it as hard as he could. Like, no layoff, just boot it at them. And then you knock someone out and you get a rebound and you just stick that in the back of it.
That's a good point, right? So it's an indirect free kick. But, right, so for it, there's that obviously famous goal. Is it in the, whatever it's, second City derby or whatever, Aston Villa and Birmingham, where the guy throws it in, but I think it nicks the keeper.
Aye.
So it counts. See, if a Hibs player hits a shot, hits an Aberdeen player and goes in, does that count because there's been another contact, or does that, you know what I mean? Because, or does it be deemed as a shot because the whole thing about indirect means you can't shoot?
No, indirect means you can't score. Like you can shoot.
So if it hits off the Aberdeen player and goes in, then it's all right.
Mate, I'm afraid I don't have the answer. I reckon it would probably depend on the referee. Some referees would give it, but some referees definitely wouldn't.
Do you know what? While you mentioned the referee, what about in the second half? I'm pretty sure John Beaton gave an indirect free kick to Aberdeen for Harry Clark punting that boy in Heath. I know that's what they scored for, but we'll get on to the goal. But
I thought his hand pointed their way originally.
Well, so he done. It wasn't like a full point. And I think one of the Aberdeen fan pages or something have tweeted it today. And you can sort of see, it looks like he's saying like, aye, this means indirect free kick or something. Like he's mouthing something. And it looks like he's saying that, but obviously we'll get on to that in the second half. But if it was, then 2-1 game's fucking unheard of.
Knowing Bobby Madden, it was probably a salute of some kind.
Other than that, in the first half, Aberdeen probably had the best chance of the first half, although, Liam, you felt Hibs probably edged it a little bit in terms of just general possession of the ball, but it was obviously a really good block from Paul Hanlon to stop us going one behind.
I think we were the better team without really doing a huge amount. I'm loath to give us too much credit for that first half performance because it wasn't great, but we were probably the better team. And I felt was Melkerson's shot in the first half. Feels like that was in the first half. Melkerson's drive on goal. So there wasn't really many moments to speak of. But I think we saw two pretty poor sides. If you're going to summarise it, but it's probably the slightly better of the poor sides, which I think's been really the story of the two club season, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I think given that was Hanlon's main thing that he had to do in the game, good time to mention, obviously 500 appearances for Paul Hanlon. It's probably quite good that Greg's missed this segment of the podcast. I guess, not to get us too sidetracked, is it 500 and out? Or, well, 502 and out probably? Or like, do you think Paul Hanlon will still be a mainstay in the team next season as well?
Of the opinion he'll be around next season. I think whether he'll be a mainstay in the team or not is to be seen. I would like us to bring in competition in that position, to put it lightly. Yeah. I think we need two or three centre-halves, genuinely. And I think his position should be under threat, but I think he's a mentor for players. I think the thing with Paul Hanlon, I've seen all shades of the conversation, like in terms of some people going over the top with credit and some people just going completely over the top with criticism. And as I always do with Paul Hanlon, lie somewhere in the middle. There's a reason that he's played for so many managers at Hibs, because he has been good enough for a period. this season he probably hasn't been good enough, but I'm very conscious of the fact that he's apparently needing an operation, which probably, let's be honest, should be done. He should have had that by now because we've nothing to play for.
Yeah,
he should be on a treatment table somewhere doing his rehab. So he's playing through probably pain and other circumstances, so we're not getting to see the best of him. So I'm not writing him off just yet, but I would hope that we bring him better in the summer.
I think the role that Darren McGregor's played the last two or three seasons of ideally isn't a first team player, but sometimes comes on and we wonder why he isn't. And then he plays too many games in a row and we realise quickly why he isn't. I think that's probably where I'd put Paul Hanlon, because he's definitely still capable of playing like 10, 15 games a season, but I don't want to see Paul Hanlon breaking 30 games next year. I don't think his time at the club's finished. I just don't think he's quite up to, like, our expectation for next year, even though we've been abysmal this year, should be third. And I don't think Paul Hanlon's currently at the level to get us there.
Can I just say, like, see on that, and I think it's fair, Harry, but I also think he's 32. He's not, like, over the hill for a centre-half, and he has been carrying from what I understand, it's a really bad injury that he's playing through at the minute. And not sound too much like an apologist, but he had a very good season last season.
Yeah, no, he definitely did, yeah.
So, like, his last probably real sample size of football was probably last season, when he was good for us. And there's not, so he might get back to that level. He might get back to that level. Once he's had an injury. So I'm very conscious he's someone who's choosing to play through an injury at the moment. And there are other players at the club who are injured who are not playing through injuries. And they are not getting any criticism because they're not playing. So there's a thing for me of, like, there's guys maybe getting off scot-free because they're injured, whereas Paul Hanlon's getting criticised that he's injured and he's in the team, which I don't know.
One thing we don't give him credit for enough, like, you don't get many good left-footed centre-backs, especially in the Scottish game. And, like, it's a good asset to have, the fact that you can have a balanced back four. Not many teams in Scotland can claim. But, yeah, no, I'd like, when people say...
500 just, like, games in itself is a massive achievement.
Yeah, tweeting at that, being like, that's 300 games too many, just fucking pipe that down, like... Players and families of players look at Twitter, just like, that's a massive achievement for someone. Just let them be happy with it. There's no point criticising them for it.
And let's be honest, if we were playing fives with Paul Hanlon, they'd be ripping every single one of us for Ars paper.
100%.
Based on how he is at the moment, I don't think you could deal with my physicality on a fives pitch.
Oh, Liam, I don't know. I heard you got a bad one a couple of weeks ago and you're still injured. You're one of the players that aren't playing through the pain barrier.
Oh, I mean, I played through the pain barrier on Thursday. Didn't you worry about it? I played right through that barrier. Smashed the barrier as well. Thank you very much.
back to the game. Second half. We mentioned what led to the free kick, which ultimately led to the goal. Harry Clarke got to clear that before it bounces, right? Liam, welcome to you, or Harry, whoever.
On you, Liam.
He has to. Aye. Like, sorry, I know it's a bit of a closed question and I can't really respond to anything other than he needs to clear it. Like, he needs to do better. I think, not to overanalyze that one situation, but I think we're beginning to see with Clarke that his best work is done in the final third 100%. Of the pitch rather than the defensive third of the pitch. So these shouts, I've heard a lot of it, it'd be fine when him and Cadden on the team next season because we'll put Clarke at right centre-back and Cadden at right wing-back. No, thank you. I think, to be honest, based on what I've seen from Harry Clarke, I think he's probably got a fair bit of development to do to play right centre-half.
I think we've probably seen that in his first game as well, right? Against Dundee United, the goal he scored, but then he was woeful. And I would maybe offset it saying he was obviously playing on the left side that day, but he was woefully out of position for two occasions, did he cost us the first goal potentially by getting ripped up? And then the second instance in that game, Anki Muller was in front of him and very rightly so expected his fullback to be behind him, and Harry Clarke went wandering. There has been a couple of instances, and I would actually say even with the goal that Aberdeen scored, he gets out jumped by Declan Gallagher as well, which is fine. You know, like, you can lose a header, but as fans, we can get favourites and etc. The goal we're talking about there, the Dundee United one, Paul Hanlon totally misjudges a header or he gets stuck under the ball and he gets berated. Well, ultimately, Harry Clarke loses the header and that's what costs us the goal. It's a good finish from Bates.
Just on Harry Clarke, I think positionally next season, if he is, if we're lucky enough to keep him next season, I think I see his future in the team either on the right of a midfield in a 4-4-2 type system, or on the right of a midfield in a 4-3-3 type system if he's got the right players around him, because I think he's very good on the ball. He's very good at running into space in the midfield three. I think he's an asset going forward. I think he scores goals. Score the number of goals he has done this season from right centre back and right wing back tells you a bit of a story in itself. And I don't think he's afraid to mix it. So he would be someone I would be looking at as more of a midfield option than as a defensive option next season.
He does look pretty comfortable sort of drifting inside the pitch. He does it quite regularly when he's on the ball. He doesn't always go down the byline. It was a poor goal to concede. I have to say, at the time, I thought Matt Macy could come for the cross, having looked back at it. Not for me, I don't think. I think it's a good cross. Is it Johnny Hayes, I think, that put it in? He's got a lifetime to cross the ball, to be honest. Nobody really gets that.
Shock!
Second phase from a set piece again. It felt like when Sean Maloney first came in, we'd eradicated that, and in the last month or so, it's definitely came back in. But it is a good finish from David Bates. I don't think Hanlon or Poitras can do much more to sort of stop the goal happening after Gallagher's won the first header. But of course, David Bates scores against Hibs. Like, of course, because the shiter a player you are, the more likely you are to score against Hibs. But the pleasing thing, Liam, I guess, was for something that's been lacking probably quite severely and definitely lacking last weekend, almost instantly Hibs got back on the front foot and created a couple of good chances. Joe Newell, probably culpable twice, definitely once, probably should be scoring when Joe Lewis smothers it, but there was also the other instant where he does well, reads a pass, he's probably, 20 yards out, and he decides to try and shoot for the edge of the box instead of taking it in. Were you impressed with the reaction? Is that the right word?
There was a reaction. Like, there was a bit of passion, there was a bit of tempo about us for all of like 10, 15 minutes, which I was glad to see it, but yeah, I think it's disappointing, isn't it, that it takes going a goal behind to see that reaction. I know it's quite often the way in football. We've seen a lot of, not Hibs specifically, but other teams make some really amazing comebacks in football over the last couple of weeks. And we've probably been reminded of just how important that is sometimes to have that sort of boot up the arse, if you like. But overall, I thought we did very well that last sort of 10, 15 minutes. Just unfortunately, just came too late in the game to get the winner.
Mm-hmm. Harry, I know you had to sort of quit watching the game sort of early because of work commitments on Saturday. Did you see either of Joe Newell's chances? Because Joe Newell has one goal for Hibs, I believe, in now 100 appearances. He could have got that to one, and he could have got that to the average of a goal every season and a half.
The only goal he scored was that one against...
He scored against Elgin, didn't he, actually? Did he score?
League goals. It's one league goal.
St Mirren.
Against Dundee United in the League Cup as well.
St Mirren away, I think, last season, wasn't it? That's the only league goal I can think of. So apologies. Maybe he averages 3 in every 100. So he averages 1 a season. But he probably should have got his average up for this season because the one Joe Lewis saved. Now, I'll give some credit. And, you know, Joe Newell did just break down quickly, but you've got to be scoring them. You know, like, how many times have we said this season, like, the ball breaks you 7 yards out, the ball has to end up in the back of the net.
I don't know if it's a confidence thing with this team. We've tried to address it a few times, and I don't think we've really put our finger on the button with it. It's just confusing because, see, the thing is, when it comes to the rebuild thing, like, this squad isn't too different to the team that finished third quite comfortably last year. Like, I don't think we need a massive rebuild. I think we need a massive culture shock. Like, I think we need someone that will come in and inspire the players and let them know that they're professional footballers. Because these players, like, I'm not trying to bash individuals, but it's just cowardly performances. Like, there's nobody brave enough that wants the ball. Like, the reason we all love Clark is because he demands the ball, even though he's a right back or right wing back, and he just carries it forward and he gets fans excited. Like, we've not got enough people that want on the ball. Like, Jake Doyle Hayes on his debut against Motherwell plays 3 through balls in. For the rest of the season, he's probably played about 5. Like, he's scared to play the ball forward. Josh Campbell comes into the team. He was brilliant. The first, like, 2 or 3 games he played, he was really, really good on and off the ball. Now, as soon as the ball touches him, he gets rid of it as soon as he can.
just passing like, the way he's facing generally.
Yeah, exactly. And like, see, the thing is with Joe Newell, like last season, he was probably underrated by most fans. But this year, I think he's been very poor this year. Again, I don't know if it's a confidence thing. Jamie Sinclair, one of the Sinclair twins, I'm sure you're familiar with him off the Twitter, he tweeted me and he said that the players have just been like over-tacticked. Like when Maloney came in, it's just been absolutely drilled into them, so they're almost robotic. And I, like, as soon as he said that, it just makes so much sense. Like these players, it's hardly like watching football. It's literally like watching robots trying to do something that they've been programmed to do, but failing at it. It's so frustrating because I don't know how we can go from third, in my opinion, improve the squad somewhat. I know we've got loads of injuries, and then we're looking like we might finish 10th. It's mental.
On that point around on rebuild, sorry, this is completely digressing from the Aberdeen game, but I don't think anyone really gives a fuck about it anyway. It's over now. It was a meaningless game. On that point around rebuild, last summer we've done this a wee bit already on the podcast over the course of the season. Last summer we're all agreed we just needed to add a few pieces to make the team better. We did that, but none of them were good enough really to get into the starting lineup, with the odd exception. None of them really been good enough to get in the starting lineup.
With Doyle Hayes,
we needed to do the same in January. Yeah, probably. We needed to do the same in January. What did we do? We added a bunch of squad players on the main who were not good enough to come to the starting lineup. So the problem that we have had is we have signed quantity, but we've failed to sign quality players who are ready to go and either play in the first team or challenge to play those positions in the first team. And the difficulty with that now is we've basically got a core of guys who we're relying on, who I think a lot of us probably know, some of them are either on the verge of not being good enough to be where we want to be or just about good enough. And then a group of other guys that we've just recently acquired, who the jury's kind of still out on some of them because we've probably not got a big enough sample size in totality.
Honestly, all of them, Liam, they're good enough.
I think the mind's made up on a few of them. Without just jumping into individual players and stuff, I mean, I'd be very, very surprised if we keep Rocky Bashiri based on the fact that we can't even get in the team ahead of a half at home again.
I don't think there's anyone that's come in January that we would sit here and say, yeah, he's definitely a player that we would want in our strongest starting 11 right now. If we could put out our strongest starting, if we could put out our strongest starting 11 on the first day of next season from players that were brought in January, probably even if you go back to the summer.
I'd put Mitchell in there as well. I think Mitchell looks a player.
In our strongest 11, though.
At the current moment, obviously. 100%.
Over Josh Doig?
I'd
play further up the pitch, though.
Personally. Small sample size, I'd like to think it will sign better than Mitchell. Personally, I would like to think if in the summer we would get a better player than Mitchell. Mm. I think Mitchell was a good January signing. Unfortunately, injuries have kind of derailed his season, but I would like to think in the summer we're looking at better than Mitchell. No slighting him. I think he's fine. I think he's fine for what we need, and I would keep him at the club. But it's this whole thing of for me, it's about real quality now. So we go into this January window, we get the right manager. We need to sign five or six guys who are going to start every week. And there's no point in us adding 11, 12 players where we've got these guys that are just on the fringes. There's no point in us signing Dylan Takes, Dan McKay's, you know, guys that aren't going to fucking play in the first team, David Mitchell's. You know, we need to sign guys that are going to come in and improve the first team squad. And that is a huge transition, because you're all of a sudden talking about guys taking up 50% or more of the minutes in the first team. It's massive. That's the rebuild. You can look at it through two lenses. Either it's a massive job, but actually, in reality, it's quite a small job. You just need to sign five or six players of the perfect quality to come to the starting lineup.
And I totally agree, Liam. I think we've got a lot of players in the starting 11 right now that, see, if they were our bench options next season, we'd probably look at a bench and go, bench is quite strong. You were to say we decide to take the option on Jasper. You bring Jasper off the bench like we did at the weekend, or you bring Ewan Henderson off the bench, or you bring a Dimitri Mitchell, you would look at the bench and go, yeah, they can actually bring an injection of life into a game. But it is tricky, because when you talk about rebuilding a squad, I think I agree with both of you. I think it's a difficult thing, like what you're suggesting, Harry, but I would agree with Liam and think 4, 5, 6, but of genuine ability to start. It's difficult as well, because we're obviously now looking at through this prism where we've not had Kevin Nisbet since when? February? So I feel like we don't know what's happening with Christian Deutsch. There's loads of different rumours about if he is or if he isn't ever going to be able to play again at this level after his injury or whatever. We haven't seen Christian Doige look good since the second game of the season against Ross County, you know, so like the jury's so far out on him if he's going to be a viable option for next season. So like there is a lot of uncertainties. Do you want to hang your hat on Kyle McGuinness being able to play 30 odd games next season? We just don't know. But we don't even know when Kevin Nisbet's going to be available. Like it's a really tricky situation for me. But what I think we can't do is get rid of too many, because you don't want, I don't think you want to sign 12 players in a summer transfer window, because you're not going to get instant results from that, I don't think, personally.
No.
Then no. Just to maybe bring it back a little bit, sorry, Harry, just wanted to, there's a player that I think sort of encapsulates that a little bit, and it's the goal scorer at the weekend. Now, Paul McGinn has been berated this season for various, and he's not had his best season, and I don't think anyone would dispute that, but I believe there's an option on his deal. I don't know who holds that, if it's him or if it's the club, but we've already spoke about having Harry Clark and Chris Cadden, right? As probably right now your two right-back options. Are we convinced Harry Clark can... Are you convinced we get the best out of either of them as a right-back? I don't know. I think maybe go against what Liam says. I think you probably could get away with two of them on the right side. If you've got them and you let go of Paul McGinn, you still need to sign a sort of backup right-back. So why not just keep someone that's been at the club for a couple of years, extend his deal? Like, people would go mental, but you can't. I don't think in one window you can go and sign 12 players. Look at Hearts, it ended up in them getting relegated twice because they were just totally rinsing through squads summer after summer after summer. I think there's still got to be some level of consistency. I think you almost remember when Leanne Dempster was here, they said they had like the free. It's like moving Paul McGinn from starting right back to backup right back, moving Paul Hanlon from like left centre half start.
There's a lot involved in this, though. I mean, like one, Paul McGinn would need to accept,
of course,
that the role of being a backup, and I don't know if he's at a stage of his career where he wants to accept that. Mm-hmm. And for me, so my personal opinion on Paul McGinn is, I think if we're going to go for a full reset, I think he goes. Okay. I do think he goes, without wanting to get into a kind of start bench sell conversation, but I'm also very mindful of the points that you made, and I think there's validity in not making too many changes. So I wouldn't be gutted if they signed a new contract. If you held a gun to my head and said, which are you keeping, McGinn or Bashiri, I'd say Paul McGinn, because he's done better, yes, than Bashiri has.
And sorry, just from a financial sense of view as well, probably.
Just we can go back to Aberdeen in a second, I promise. But Harry, we're done with that. Start of the
season. Paul McGinn scored a goal. Hibs scored a good goal. James Scott and Jasper done well. It finished 1-1. We probably should have won. On you go.
We at the start of the season, first eight games, we had a fit Kyle McGinness and a fit Martin Boyle, who were two superstars of the team. We were comfortably the third best team in the country. We lost Martin Boyle. We lost Kyle McGinness. Hearts, I think, quite clearly took over us as the third best team. We were then the fourth best team in the country. We were consistently, until Martin Boyle dipped in form a bit, the fourth best team in the country. And come January, when we lost Boyle, we completely disintegrated. I don't, like, in my opinion, I don't know if this sounds absolutely ridiculous, but I think if Kyle McGinness had stayed fit the entire season, I think we would have finished fourth comfortably. I don't think we would have been as good to keep up with Hearts, but it's difficult to say, because you can't just be like, let's go and get our superstar. But we're one player in the middle of the park to kind of connect the whole thing together, like Kyle McGinness did at the start of the season, from being the fourth best team comfortably in the country. Like, not like Dundee United are currently sitting in fourth. They are terrible. We are substantially better than Dundee United if we had one player in the middle of the park that can actually progress the team up the pitch. Because Joe Newell and Doyle Hayes prefer that role of sitting a bit deeper, and they just clash so much when you've not got that third option to help them move forward. And for some reason, like, I really like Ewan Henderson as a player, but he's not been able to do that, which I thought, I was hoping.
McGinness, when he plays, looks stronger than...
Yeah.
No, I know that's the biggest ironic thing in the world. The player that can stay fit looks strong, but when he's on the pitch, he looks like he can handle himself. He looks like he can take a bash. You know, he looks like he can muscle players off the ball. And let's not get ahead of ourselves. But no, John McGinn could take the ball and drive 60 yards. He could take a bump, but he'd stay on his feet and he'd go. McGinness has the traits about him. And I think you're spot on with that, Harry, to be honest. I think I've seen Liam nodding along there to agree. Like, even if you go back to that season under Lennon in the top flight, we had John McGinn and Dylan McGill at the first 6 months of the season. We were sitting fifth or sixth. Add Scott Allen into that midfield and it's a whole different kettle of fish. You know, you took out a Slivka or a Danny Swanston, you put a Scott Allen in, who at the time was obviously not, I'm not saying I'm not campaigning for Scott Allen right now, but one player in that position as that sort of link between the midfield and attack is huge. And we obviously built around, I think to an extent we did build around Kyle McGuinness this season, in terms of we didn't sign any, you know, Jack Ross didn't sign anyone in that advanced midfield position. We didn't have anyone there. We had, well, him, McGuinness and Irvin to do it last season. We lost Irvin. We put our eggs in the Kyle McGuinness basket, and the fact he got injured, obviously. Can you just remember when he got injured? Was it like, was it in training or something? I don't remember.
Was it not after the St. Johnston game?
I don't remember seeing him get injured.
I'm sure it was a training thing.
The last game I can remember him playing was Ibrox. He definitely played Ibrox, I think. We've got all summer to talk about squad rebuildings, and
I'm enjoying this conversation. I've got another couple of things. So never wanted to toot anybody's horn from Hearts, obviously, but two interesting models. You've got Hearts and Celtic. Celtic, obviously, I've got a massive excess of money compared to everybody else in the league. They shipped off, if you ask a Celtic fan, they're like, we're 9 million in the black. Mate, you spent 32 million regardless if you made 40 million. And that's how it works in Scottish football. That's a ridiculous amount of money. They've got the money to bring in quality. I think the point you made about you and Hearts, they had a season, I think across three seasons, they literally went through 36 first team players, which is bonkers, whereas they've got in Joe Savage now, and he is bringing in like three players per window of very high quality. Like the names they're being linked with now is Lauren Shankland and Alan Forrest. If you ask Hearts fans who are you after, everybody knows their targets, and they've got very select players that could easily either slot into their team or slot into the top spot on the bench. Like, yeah, we're at a stage where we're all very frustrated because the team's played like pish, and it's played but we need to get a new system, because the system we're playing is horrible to watch. Even when we're winning games, it's still crap. And we need to start. I think what Liam said, the word quality, and it's literally just hit a light bulb in my head. We just need to target like five quality players, whether it takes us an entire summer to get them in or not. Like, I don't want a whole, like, obviously there's a few players, if they left, I don't care. But as you said, Ewan, we can't just ship out 12 and bring in 13. Like, that's just not how football works. And that is how you start, like, the whole collapse. We need to target very, very high quality players to bring in. And I just, like, if I was to summarize it, the two key things we need is one leader that we could potentially, like, at the moment, apart from Ryan Porteous, there's not a captain in that team. There's not a single captain at this club at the moment. I love Who's Paul Stevenson? Hanlon. Stevenson's a club legend as well, but he comes across as a quiet man.
Yeah, but look at his performance.
Don't need to be allowed to be a captain.
Look at his performance at Hampton.
Let me rant, and then you can tell me off after. So I think even alongside it, I think every team in reality does need a good two or three leaders.
Yeah.
If you look at Hearts, they've got like Haring, Halliday, and then their centre backs are big and stupid, so they work as captain types. And then also we need another player that can actually get me excited. Like, at the current moment, there's not a single player that started on Saturday that when they're on the ball, I'm like, yes, come on. Like, you know, at the start of the season, every time Boyle got on the ball, you're thinking, oh, we could get something here. Not a single player that started on Saturday can get us thinking like that. And if it's Harry Clark, he's a right back, for God's sake. Like, come on. We need an advanced player that when he's on the ball, we're like, come on. Like, I think that's the two things we need in the summer.
I think while we're on the rebuild, we all put in our strongest 11s of players that are currently contracted to be at the club next season, right? Let's just run. I don't think we spoke about it on an episode though.
No, we haven't. Can I just say, I said five or six players, Harry, and when I said five or six, I actually meant six, because I've looked through the players who got contracted next season. There's only five players that I want to see start for us next season, and they are Cadden, Porteous, Doig, Clark, and Nisbet.
Right, okay. Let me run through this then, right? So if we were to get a sort of agreement about what we have contracted now, and then we'll pick where. So we'll run off five or six then. So Macy would probably be the starting goalkeeper, I would say. Probably just over Dabrowski, maybe. I don't think
Matt Macy will be here next season. I know he's contracted.
Right now. Right fucking now.
Right now, David Marshall starts. That's it. That's my opinion.
Right. David Mitchell, do you mean?
Yeah. Right back would probably be... Well, we just go for a basic 4-4-2.
Aye, keep it simple.
Yeah. Right back, Harry Clark. Centre backs, Porteous and Hanlon. Left back, Josh Doig. Right midfield, Chris Cadden. Centre midfield, Dronio and Kyle McGuinness.
Yeah.
Left midfield, Dimitri Mitchell.
Aye.
Nisbet and Doidge up front.
Probably Nisbet and Henderson just off them.
Or Nisbet and Melkerson.
4-1-1. I know we said 4-4-2, but I think Henderson. So four getting the head of Doidge at the minute.
Let's change it to a 4-2-3-1. That sounds fancier than a... But, so
I was
going to
go through Mike Bassett. 4-4-fucking-2!
So, from that, where for you, Harry, are your the point where we need that real quality? For me, the left midfield spot would scream out and a second striker.
Definitely, for me, centre-back screaming out, because after Porteous and Hanlon, you've literally got...
contracted McGregor.
No comment, because Liam will bite my head off. Nah, joking. the thing is, I feel bad for Mitchell, because I think he came in and he'd done pretty well. And I think that if we had a fully fit team, I think he would have been one of the better players for the second half of the season. And I think in a good system, I think that he would actually be quite an effective player. Like, pacey and can carry the ball, and he seems like he can actually finish as well, which is fun. Being honest, like, I don't know how controversial it is, but I don't know if Joe Newell's the calibre of player we need if we want to get to that level to compete with Hearts. Like, as I said, last season, very good. This season, like...
I think Joe Newell's starts for Hearts.
I don't know. Like, the thing is with me, with Joe Newell, like, it was a perfect time for him to step up and prove that he is the player that we all thought he was, and I think he's absolutely fallen into the shadows.
He's had his own injuries as well, mate. He was out for a month.
I actually probably agree that on ability, he probably does start for Hearts, but I don't, in terms of style of football, I don't think he does start for Hearts in the kind of midfield players that they've signed. They've got an identity as centre midfielders, but Ingemey and Devlin are basically the same kind of player. Those kind of box-to-box runners with loads of legs that like to get involved in breaking the play up. Neither of them are fantastic footballers, as much as they love to tell us that Ben Ingemey is the second coming of God.
From what we've seen in Joe Newell, I can't for the life of me understand why, if we're going to play a 3-4-3, why Josh Campbell's playing further up the park than Joe Newell. I find Joe Newell's he could be quite effective in the final third. Even look at the weekend, they had two chances. Fucking Hecky, there was obviously something in there. Hecky thought he was a left winger. He played left wing down south. No, like, I don't understand. Yeah. I don't see Joe. For me, I think Joe Neal's best position would be in a midfield three, almost like of a 4-3-3 on the left hand side of it. I think Hibs aren't, for me, I think there's a couple things I think we really, really need to sign in the summer. A centre back, probably two, because I think Ryan Porteous will be away. I think we need a genuine, proper holding midfielder, number six, whatever you want to call it. Someone that can do that job on the rain. So, because I think Sean Maloney was quoted, I think it was potentially on Long Bangers when they interviewed him, or it was on another interview, but it might have been at one of the fan nights. He basically said he only wants to play with one sitting, but he didn't think Jake Doyle, Hayes or Jordan, he didn't name them, but he didn't feel like he had the players that were able to play the six on their own, so they were playing with two. Like, I think if you get that one right, again, we'll go back to probably the team that we've most enjoyed watching since we've been back up in the top flight. John McGinn wasn't a sitter. Scott Allen didn't sit. Dylan McGill done that job on his own because he was capable of getting the ball off the centre-backs and playing the right pass, capable of breaking up play, which I think probably goes underrated a little bit for McGill. I think if we can sign a properly good player that can play that position effectively, then it frees up a Joe Newell, it frees up a Kyle McGuinness. And that's where I think we should be going. I think Hibs should... Do you know what I'd love? If the new manager comes in and we have a squad that doesn't look like we have to play three at the back. I'm a bit fed up of seeing three at the back. I'm not going to lie.
Aye. One thing I'll say, they should call me Hindsight Harry because I'm all about this 2020 vision with the specs on. We would have finished top six and probably comfortably fourth if we didn't loan any players out in January.
Mate, we'd have probably finished fourth if Melkerson had scored against Dundee, right?
Yeah, no, true. But like, see, the thing is, as much as I'm on the fence with Hallberg, I don't think he lit the place up. But I also think that he's a substantially better player than Campbell. I think that Gogic, as much as a lot of Hibs fans find him very frustrating, I think he's got a role to play. And I'm not trying to endorse Jamie Murphy at all. But when he left, what options did we have at winger? Like, I'm not saying that he should be starting games, but he came on a few times and he scored a few goals just because we needed someone to fill that position. He was a bit rusty, but he could come on like the goal against St Johnstone. Like, it's three players.
He scored against Dundee United as well.
I probably did. But aye, that was Maloney's second game, aye.
Uh-huh.
But like, that's three players that aren't starters in an ideal Hibs squad, but if we had them around, it would have been a lot stronger than what we had.
I guess the question you have to ask is, look, if when you look at the squad, if you take the three players directly, so Jamie Murphy, who was he replaced by? Would we, in terms Mitchell, of position probably. On the park?
I would say Mitchell. I don't think Mitchell was brought in as a left back. And the thing is, like, with the system we played under Maloney, like, Murphy would have been a left wing back. So he was brought in to replace Murphy, I would say.
I was going to say, would they not have been part? I was thinking more Henderson off the left of that three, but did we sign better, is the question. And not, I would, right now, I think probably Murphy, if we're comparing to Mitchell, I'd rather have Mitchell on my squad than Murphy. But Josh Campbell, I wasn't a huge fan of Hallberg, I wasn't a huge fan of Gogic, but I think they're both better than Josh Campbell.
Aye, and let's not get too down on him, like, because he is still going to be under contract next season, but like, or not. I think
it was alright the weekend.
Last week,
okay.
We'd need for him to go out alone, I think. We'd be for him to go out alone, probably with a Championship club, and try and work his way back up from there, and try and rebuild some of his confidence. I don't think he'll be on particularly high wages, so it's not like he'll be expensive to have around, but we need to have a wee look into seeing whether or not Dylan Tate and Dan McKay are ready for next season, because they're two players who are part of that problem in terms of just signing quantity rather than quality, guys that aren't ready to come and play for the first team. So I think there's a lot to be said there. On the I can't even remember what point I was going to respond on because it was a while ago now. But on the kind of Joe Neal thing, I'm probably, I know I said Joe Neal maybe would be a starter for me, but I probably would be able to be convinced about that if we were to sign a number six that he could play alongside him, allowed him to play a bit further forward. And the kind of mould of player that I think we need is almost like a more cultured version of Mark Milligan, like probably not as old, like a European Mark Milligan that can actually play a bit of football, but as a bit of a bastard. Like, we need someone with that bastard streak in them, because every team has a bastard. And the reason that Gogic didn't work as a bastard is because Gogic couldn't play. He could just be a bastard and nothing else. And it's a very difficult position to sign. I think if you look at most spined teams that are successful in European football, in Scottish football, in English football, any league you want to look at, the six is probably the most pivotal position on the pitch.
Ryan Jack and Calvin.
That right. You get that right, everything else falls into place around it because it makes your other midfield players better.
Yep.
I'm not going to go into all the examples of all the clubs in the English Premier League, but I'm thinking about the clubs that are successful at the moment and their sixes. Yep. And I'm thinking about the clubs that aren't successful and their sixes.
You can look at it from a, like you said, from a Scottish point of view. Callum McGregor's been Celtic's the best player this year and he's their deepest playing midfielder. Like, Brian Jack, Rangers have probably missed him more than anyone else with his injuries. We can say what we want, but Hart's strength has been Benigame and Devlin. Haran's stepped up, and by all accounts from the guys at the terrace, they seem to think that, well, their Hart's, the guys on the terrace say Hart's look better when Haran plays with one of them because it frees them up. Like, for Joe Neal, Jake Doyle Hayes, Josh Campbell, three of them all have their strengths. I don't think any of them's strength is taking the ball off the back and disrupting play. Joe Neal probably is too rash in the tackle to play as a lone six, because you look at the amount of rash bookings he gets and sort of late tackles as it is. If he was there on his own, I think he'd be racking up the suspensions. Jake Doyle Hayes, I'm just not convinced, can play as a six on his own. I don't think he does enough there. Campbell, do you know, Campbell's of the three, Campbell's probably the most ready made to be a six in terms of what he can do off the ball. But he's probably like a bit like what Liam's just saying about Gogic. I think that's a huge hole we need to fill. And I just see if you get that right, you can go and play a 4-3-3, or you can go and do it. It opens up so many more options for me. And like I said, I just hope we're not playing fucking, I do not want to see on the first day of the season Hibs are about three next season. I can't think of any successful teams right off the top of my head that play three at the back.
Neil Lennon, yay!
We finished fourth. Okay. I know, but Celtic play a sort of 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. Rangers play a 4-3-3. Liverpool play a 4-3-3. City play a 4-3-3. Like,
all right. You've listed half the names. I'm gonna listen. I'm gonna list some names now because I'm absolutely enjoying ruining the fact you're on an agenda, and I'm just kind of speaking out against it. So I promise. Last wee tangent from me, then we can go back to what you've written down. But two players that I've seen in the media and on socials this week that Hibs are rumoured to sign are goalkeeper David Marshall and striker Stephen Fletcher.
I think Liam started that second one. Liam
might have started it, and then I saw it from the person that Liam passed it on to. However, I've been informed by my sources that Liam did in fact start it.
Did you not start on here last week? Did I make that up?
I said that Michael O'Neill should bring Fletcher with him and started it.
Fucking market manipulation again.
I mean, I don't think you can get a price on Stephen Fletcher's next club, so I'm not sure if it is better than maybe you do. McGrookie special. Sorry, Harry, anyway.
No. But what I was just going to say is I know that we're all wanting to build for the future and stuff, but if I was in charge of transfers, as we discussed a few podcasts ago, I might be nominated to be. That would be my first two signs in the summer. I think it would be some very shrewd pieces of business that would help steady the ship and bring in some of the experience that we desperately need.
I'm all for Marshall and Fletcher, like big style. Yeah. I don't see a world in which they don't come in and improve our starting 11. I think Fletcher gets better out of the players that are around him. I know he's 35, but absolutely on a one-year contract with a stipulation that if he plays a certain number of games that he gets a one-year extension if he wants it. Probably similar for Marshall, to be honest. Still a dead decent goalkeeper, I think, in the patches that I've seen him play. I know he's been kind of put aside by Derby this season, but I think a lot of that's been down to the financial situation more than anything. Like appearance fees and stuff has been a bit of an issue there. So I think both of those. I just think that if you sign two guys of that age, then we probably need to be looking at the other recruits being of a younger kind of background, because you don't want the average age of the squad to go too far the other way around.
Yeah, but all the Wains were signed in January. That'll bring that.
All the Wains are only going to be here.
Equilibrium.
Who's signing them? Another week's passed. We're absolutely no closer to knowing.
Ben Kensington.
Well, I was going to say who's signing them manager-wise, but after all the chat that's come at the club, I'm a bit confused on who is signing them. Who's going to be the next manager? I don't think we're any closer to knowing, are we? The noise would suggest that we might be getting there this time next week, hopefully. Some conversations taking place this week. I think the evening news have suggested that final shortlists are being drafted up and should be being dealt with this week. What's got you thinking this week? Where's your heads at with the next manager now?
I think in terms of the first question, in terms of time scales, before we come out and talk about manager, I think it probably will be certainly into next week, maybe even the following week before anyone's appointed. I think shortlisting is quite a long exercise. If you've got quite a big long list, then you've got to get in front of all the candidates, interview them, give them all an opportunity, and then you've probably got to go back to the board to get that decision ratified. So I think we're probably talking certainly at least another week from today.
Oh, it's the end of the month, aye.
Yeah, probably longer.
It's a shame because I think like the ideal situation would have been like not to be in the dugout, but to be on the pitch for the final day of the season, essentially just to say a hi to all the fans and try and get everybody on board. I think that would have been a nice touch. But as Liam said, I doubt it would take them less than 4 days or less to actually get the new guy in the door. I don't think they'd do it on the weekend. I wouldn't expect it to be any quicker than next Monday that we'd actually find out.
Just in case, Liam, how's your work schedule? Just in case you need to record any emergency podcasts again, Thursday, Friday.
Absolutely slammed this week, unfortunately. We'll find a way to make it work. We might just have to do like a breakfast podcast in the morning. We might need to get you boys to set your alarms for like 6:30, and we'll get on a wee cup of coffee. You can see me in my gym jams, eating a peanut butter and banana on toast while we fucking talk about who's got the job. I think Harry makes a really good point, and a huge driver for the club, I think, will be this early season ticket release deadline being the 17th or the 18th of May, if I'm not mistaken. I think ideally they'd want someone in before the 17th, 18th, because season ticket sales are absolutely pivotal to the team that you can put on the park next season. I know we say it every single year, and I know there's a little bit of money in the bank, but you really need to shift season tickets in order to be able to give the manager a decent squad to work with. So any wee touches of PR like that the club can do between now and the beginning of next season will just help to nudge things along. I also think that signings are really pivotal as well. Like, I remember going back years to when we signed Gary O'Connor back in the middle of the summer. Yeah. It'd been a very, very flat window. Not much had happened. And then O'Connor signed and there was a rush. There was a buzz. There was an excitement that kind of came back. A couple of signings like that.
Spring Sproul that summer as well, Sproul was already. Sproul was a year before. Sproul was a year before.
Right.
He was still here though. Sorry, that was my bad. Who's your ideal candidate? I know we've probably been asking that non-stop, but we know we're pretty confident it's not going to be Derek McInnes. Who is both your ideal candidates right now from what we've seen?
Can I just say one thing on the season ticket thing? If the club just put out a statement that simply said Malky Mackay will not be next Hibs manager, I would buy my season ticket outright. The very next second, like until it's confirmed he's not manager, I'm not buying my season ticket. I'll pay the extra money and avoid the early bird if needed, but until the club confirm that, I'm not getting a season ticket. But out of the names I've heard, like genuinely, I wouldn't be disappointed by any of them. I think that Chris Hughton sounds quite fun. A guy that played quite nice football with teams that didn't really have the players to play nice football, so I think he could definitely transform what we've got now. I think Appleton. Obviously the clubs he's been at aren't the most exciting clubs, but I think he's done a very good job everywhere he's went. Obviously the whole severance package thing, I wouldn't blame him for getting a good one at the current moment after the last two managers' experiences.
Is that that's what I fell down on last time?
Apparently he was going to get the job over Heckey, but then apparently they weren't going to offer him a long enough or a big enough payout, so he decided not to take the job. Which, after Heckey as well, not too bad a choice from him. But yeah, like being honest, like I know it's not going to happen now. I don't actually think that Derek McInnes would have been the worst thing in the world. Like I don't think it would get season tickets sold. I don't think it would make me feel inspired. But I think in terms of if Rom Gordon wants consistent 4th, 5th every season, I think that Derek McInnes would have brought that. But yeah, no, from the options we've heard, I would say Chris Hughton or Michael O'Neill are the ones that would get me most excited.
Appleton's probably a no from me. Just I think he has done a reasonable job. I think at a number of the clubs he's been at, and I wouldn't write anyone off based on the jobs. But for me, Dave Graham's probably going to argue with me on this, but he's not really managed any clubs of the kind of substance and expectation of Hibs, maybe other than Portsmouth. I know he's done kind of caretaker roles in the short term, but Lincoln City to Hibs is a huge jump. I used to know a Lincoln City fan through work, and they're a tiny club, like a really tiny club, and they're kind of punching above their weight in English League One. So for me, probably I would rule him out on that basis. And I also just think the whole season ticket thing, he doesn't sell season tickets, like just plain and simple. So I think that kind of leaves me with sort of two or three that I'm interested in. Chris Hughton, I think if there was any way the club could make that work, yes. Philip Koku, I think, still interests me. I think he's interested me since day dot. And I think Michael O'Neill probably not from a... I think the only thing that maybe lets Michael O'Neill down is there's an association with him playing a brand of football that is not great. He's kind of built teams that are really solid defensively, but not like amazing to watch going forward. I think the attraction with Michael O'Neill is the Hibs connection that buys him time. But if I can just shoehorn a fourth one in before we finish, sorry.
Absolutely, mate.
I said two or three. I think the one over and above everyone that I would want would be John Dell Thomason, based on me being able to reflect
and
understand a bit more about him. I think he just gets I think he's the kind of guy that gets bums on seats, and he's got credit in the bank already because of a certain comment that he made in the media conference.
Well, you haven't really left me anything.
Sorry.
No, Ewan, what you mean? This is your time. You can no, the create one, the next nuts.
Just say
no,
nuts.
Well, yes. the one that obviously we put out on the social media, the tweet was it last week or the week before, and got people to reply. Rob Edwards was an interesting one. I think he was linked potentially at the start as well.
What is that, the Forest Green guy?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. Look, he's only been there just over a year, so he's experienced. Do you know what? He probably doesn't tick. I think we've heard that the club want a good chunk of experience, or at least at a decent level, and is a season in League Two. Great, no, but by all accounts, Forest Green, barring a sort of late patchy run of form, I know they won the league on the last day, but they were dead set for promotion, say, about January, you know what I mean? Like, they absolutely romped it in the first half of the league. They play pretty decent brand of football from the quarter cutler games on Sky, obviously, and international breaks and stuff. And I just think, generally, we do better with up-and-coming managers. Now, I know Maloney absolutely flopped, let's be honest, but, you know, I look at a Stubbs, you look at a Tony Mowbray, you know, like, they had a little bit of, I think Stubbs had had the reserves at Everton, you know, so he at least had something in his back pocket, overshot like a Sean Maloney did. But I think Edwards would be an interesting one, but having just got Forest Green promoted, they might want to hang about there, you know, like, and try and build something. But I would agree with Liam that if John Thomason is available, then he would be my number one choice if Hibs could get on board with it. And then I think someone like a Philip Cocu as well would be interesting. But yeah.
It's an international thing that's interesting, eh?
Mm-hmm. Like, we've just not like, had just, it. We've not had it at all, have we?
Like an international, like not a championship kind of manager or a Premier League manager, like just someone from abroad. Connections, bringing different players to the country, like potentially slightly different kind of scouting network. If we want to sign players from more international markets, like Ian Gordon and Ben Kensel talk about, appoint a manager from a more international market.
Yeah.
Let's just go Raj with it for a moment. I've actually played with the idea of it in my head a few times, and I honestly think we could do a lot worse than Dick Campbell. Like, I don't know if you guys seen his speech that he put on, or that our bro put on the Twitter before the game against Kilmarnock, but honestly, as soon as he...
Sorry, everyone, I've just muted Harry.
Nah, I thought I'd have some fun. Nah, but I'm just trying to think if there's anybody in Scottish football at the moment that's a bit left field that we could actually, like, pinch up, because, like, Dick Campbell, maybe if we were, like, a St. Mirren or something, he could potentially... Because, like, realistically, I don't think he's the man to, like, take us on to Europe, but...
No.
We've got some players from the Championship, like Kevin Nisbet springs to mind, that have been very effective players. And, you know, you get like non-league football coaches, you know, they're underrated. So we should be looking down there for managers. But
I don't think, do you know, Harry, I don't think there is. I don't think there is a candidate out there in the lower leagues of Scottish football right now. I think in years gone
and
by,
even top flight,
you had a Jack Ross that was doing well at Sunderland and went, doing well at St Mirren and went to Sunderland. You've had someone like Jim Goodwin who's went from Alloa to St Mirren, obviously on to Aberdeen. Now, right now, even, like you say, even top flight. Look, if you're talking about that,
Graham Alexander, no.
Yeah, like the thing is, Harry, right?
Racist, no.
Exactly that. For every single reason that you wouldn't want Malky Mackay, if you were talking about someone that's maybe potentially overachieving in Scottish football, he is that candidate. But there's not a fucking hope in hell I would ever want Hibs to touch him. In terms of someone outperforming where they probably should be in Scottish football, I don't think anyone else is doing that. You know, like, I really... Livingston are seventh. They maybe should be about 10th. You know, like Martindale's not doing that fantastic a job. Callum Davidson's flopped after a first good season. Aberdeen have just got a new manager. Nielsen's not going to go to Hibs. Obviously, the two old firm teams are out of the question. We didn't want Malky Mackay.
You want John fucking Kennedy either.
Tam Courts doesn't really inspire us. We know he plays dull, boring football. Dundee United fans, I think, if they don't finish fourth, we'll probably want him sacked.
Can I just say, I enjoyed how you went through the whole team and then every team, and then you said Aberdeen. And because you wanted Jim Goodwin once, instead of saying, oh, Jim Goodwin's crap, you went, oh, Aberdeen have got a new manager.
No, but again, so their manager was underperforming. Like, I was working my way down the league table.
Jim Goodwin fanboy.
I don't know why he's piping up as well. He was on board with the Robinson Goodwin trade last year. Good, like, but you know what I mean? Goodwin and Robinson are just in new jobs, neither of which have done anything in the last recent history that you'd want us to go and take them.
Can you imagine Mark McGee rocking up at Easter Road and just turning on the radiators? I can't remember going to get third this season.
The only
just
one.
Just going round with those easy radiator keys.
The only manager in the last year or so that could maybe be seen to have done something would potentially have been James McPake, but he left Dundee sitting bottom of the table. Like, off the top, I might be wrong here, but there's not many, I don't think there's anyone in Scotland doing better than they should be right now, is my general I think it's full of teams that are underperforming. Hibs, Dunfermline, Aberdeen, Killy have just got promoted back to probably where you would expect them to be, sort of probably bottom half of the top flight. Falkirk are massively under. I don't see any, unless you were going to go and get fucking Paul Hartley for Cove, but they're funded by loads of money. Kevin Thompson for Kelty, but he comes with his own baggage and plenty of cash. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really see anyone in Scottish football that would be screaming out to say, let's take, even in this hypothetical situation, I can't even pretend to say they'd be worth taking the risk. I don't see that person anywhere. Well, Billy Dodds at Inverness in his first management seat, they might get promotion. Like, you know, like, there's nobody. There's absolutely nobody.
Fair enough. So, for a manager it is, Jon Dahl Tomasson. If he doesn't pick up the phone, then Chris Hughton or Michael O'Neill will do. Aye. Is that the consensus?
I think
so. No. If it's no that Tomasson boy, it is Liam Fogarty. Yeah!
Liam, under-18s, their season's been extended.
Fucking needed to be the number of games in hand they've got. I think it's mental at this stage of the season that they can have 4 games in hand over the team that are behind them with like literally 2 weeks left to go in the season. Their fixture schedule was that bad that they were going to play Friday night, 7:30 kickoff, and then play at 3 o'clock on the Sunday, so 36 hours later essentially. We've got a number of different games to run through. I noticed that Patrick McPartland tweeted today that Jacob Blaney, Murray Aiken and Robbie Hamilton are all in training with the first team today. They beat Celtic 4-0 on Friday night, quite a comfortable win. Celtic are sitting bottom of the under-18s league, and I think the context that needs added to that is a lot of their better 17s and 18s are in the kind of development side in the lowland league, which is why they're bottom of the league, but comfortable 4-0 win for Hibs. I know there's been a lot of talk this season because under-18s have been winning games about bringing first team, bringing some of those players in the first team, and we've all been kind of quashing some of that chat. Probably me the most, because I just think it's just such a huge gap between under-18s and first team football. But I don't know what your views would be based on probably the schedule.
What is the schedule looking like now?
So it's all a wee bit unclear, to be honest, in terms of the next few games. They are playing tomorrow night, so they've got a game, okay. I think it's 7:30 tomorrow night, so you can assume that anyone who's in that team will obviously be unavailable for Dundee, because they can't be in two places at once.
That's a safe assumption to make.
And then, obviously, the 12 o'clock game on Sunday, they are scheduled to have at least one, probably two fixtures between now and Sunday to close it out.
I wouldn't expect to see any of them. Maybe the 3 or 4 that are training have been deemed good enough or even surplus, you know, like maybe they've got a decent backup to play in the 18s last, you know, maybe that's why they're up training, but no, I'd be surprised, which is unfortunate, you know, because it's just the way it's went. If these games were able to have got played earlier in the season, they'd have had the league wrapped up and, you know, your Ethan Laidlaw, your Connor Youngs, the McIntyre. I think, is there two McIntyres, I think? I don't know if they're...
Jacob and Austin.
Like, you know what? These guys probably would have been involved, but... And I know people say the priority's got to be first team football. They've worked hard all year. Go and let them just fucking win their league and reap the rewards. Like, if they're good enough, they will only have to rely on a St Johnstone at home in the last game of the season to be their only appearance for Hibs. Like, you know, like...
I agree. I also think there's got to be a call made on which one of them do you include in the kind of pre-season first-team squad and which ones are in the development squad, because it does feel like there's probably some from this crop who might be able to go and get into the first team next season. Then for others, the reality will be it'll be at least one or two seasons before they're really ready to break in, just because of age and physicality and other factors. But no, I just wanted to give them a bit of profile, because clearly they're really just a couple of games away from potentially winning the league. They're playing Tuesday, Friday between now and I think the 27th of May, which will be when their season ends now that it's been extended. So they will get to conclude all their fixtures. And there might even be some dead rubbers for them between now and the end of the season, which means you maybe even bring the next even younger crop through between now and the end of the season. But
I would like to see. So, play Alan Del Ferry. Been on the bench every week. Why not?
Is he left footed? He sounds like he should be.
Right footed. Right, he's right back or centre back, so I'm guessing he's right footed. Unless like, he's here, modern fancy full backs.
That's a very left footed name. Like, if my name's Del Ferry, I'm playing with my left foot if I'm left footed or no.
Like, play Rúnar Hauga for more than 5 minutes at Dens this time and he might get sent off, never mind just get an absolute, the most stonewall yellow you've ever seen in your life. Like there is obviously, like, just a little, do you know what? I didn't care. Like, I actually, like, do you know what would be a laugh? See if we got beat now, I'm not, see if we got beat tomorrow night, then beat St Johnstone on the last day of the season and Dundee somehow won their game in the last game of the season and St Johnstone went down on goal difference. I could probably get on board with that. But I want Hibs to win tomorrow night, obviously. But it would be funny. But unfortunately... Yeah,
I think the boy Murray Aiken's a centre midfielder who kind of sometimes plays centre-back, so I'm guessing that by that he's kind of pretty strong, robust. I'm trying to talk with authority about a team I've seen play twice this season, so obviously I don't know the players inside out. Patrick McPartlin or Morris Duggan are your two people for the under-18s team. They're the two kind of experts on Twitter. But I would say... if he's that kind of player, then maybe he could come into the defensive midfield, given that position that we're needing.
Yeah.
I think Hamilton's maybe a centre midfielder as well. I know Blaney's a defender, so they're clearly in about the first team squad for a reason.
Yeah.
It might be they do play some kind of part between now and the end of the season.
Be interesting to see what's happening in the development squad next season, eh? On the chat, obviously, I know, like, there was a lot of buzz of it leading into January, throughout January, and then it's definitely, I think Steve Keane maybe done an update last month or something, but
especially with Hearts going into the Lowland League, if that comes off, that happens. Hearts going into the Lowland League, obviously Celtic and Rangers there too. I mean, I would probably be of the opinion that might be the best place for us if the alternative is playing friendlies against English teams, but I think we've already kind of nailed our colours to the mast on that. It looks like we're going to be playing friendlies next season, so
yeah,
up to them.
So we do have two games. We're going to between us somehow, we're going to squeeze in a podcast between the Dundee and the St Johnstone game. Dundee on tomorrow night or tonight by the time you're probably listening to this. Do you know what we're going to do? We're just going to do predictions for St Johnstone, just in case at all. Dundee prediction, Harry, for tomorrow night. What do you want to see from Hibs? Any wholesale changes? Is there any wholesale changes available?
I want to see that my... service tomorrow goes down so I don't have to watch a game. That's what I genuinely want to see. But yeah, no, with the team, I just want David Gray to say to them, lads, we've had a pretty pish season. We're playing against the worst team in the league. Go out there and I don't care what happens. Just make sure you have a good time, lads. And then if they don't have a good time, then bring on all the youngsters and show them how to do it. There's no point in like having a tactical mastermind from David Gray. Just play players that didn't play that could potentially play next season so you can give the next manager some tips on who he should keep and who shouldn't. Like, I just want to see us have at least 6 shots on target. I don't think it's that much to ask.
Nah, it's no. Score?
6-0 Hibs.
Liam, what about yourself tomorrow night?
I was in some ways kind of worried about like playing a running team who've got everything to play for and has got nothing to play for in reality, but I watched sports.
Did you listen to Mark McGee after the game?
How salty was he?
Mate, I was listening to Sports Sound. I was listening to Sports Sound on the way home, and Dundee should have sacked him on the spot. Like, and look, let's be honest, they're down. I can't see Dundee beating us and then beating whoever they've got in the last season.
They've won two games in a row this season.
They won two games in a row and then sacked at Pitch.
One of them's a cup game.
See if the Hibs manager ever came out and just sounded that fucking defeated. I'd be like, let's just pack it in. Like, let's just call it. Like, let's call it now. But aye, what are you expecting tomorrow?
They're just so bad, eh?
Dundee,
like, they're worse than us. Like, they were very fortunate we got a man sent off against them last time out. Very fortunate. I think we'll go win 2-0. Okay. I think we were good on the road against St Mirren, and I think we'll find a similar kind of performance. And we'll go and beat them 2-0. I think our Borges back's massive. I think we've just got enough about us to beat them, to be honest. I know they'll be mad up for it and stuff, but I just think we'll be too good. We're better players. Hopefully Charlie Adam grabs another assist on one of our goals.
Right. We're going to end on a...
Can I say one thing about the Charlie Adam?
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's been covered elsewhere, but they're talking the same on Sports Scene that he only done that because he's a good player.
do you know,
that was his mistake. because he was trying to overplay it because he's such a good player. He didn't want to hoof it. So you know, one of them is he passed it across the 6 yard box.
And it, do you know, it does totally contradict, because now I have to say I've disagreed with probably most things that Sports Sound have said this season, but it was Pat Bonner and Richard Gordon and what is it, Leanne Crichton? Is that right? And they're on Sports Sound after their game, and they're like, they basically said, what the fuck is he doing? Because if, why does he not just shell it? Because the keeper's going to shell it. What's actually happening after he plays that pass? Other than, like, it's getting launched anyway. But look, we're going to end on a nice topic on the back of a Charlie Adams tag.
Percy, you said Pat Bonner. You didn't let me do an impression of Craig, did you ever consider calling Greg Taylor up to the Scotland squad when you were manager? Like, Greg Taylor was 12. Craig Levine, the Scotland manager.
Oh, fucking hell. For the third time, we're going to end on a topic. Look, it's potentially premature, but we're not entirely sure how many of us are going to be able to record early in the week. So we're going to take a little bit of the piss out of ourselves right now. It's play of the year on Sunday night. And what we're going to do is look back at our predictions for player of the year and young player of the year way back. Now, we've done this on the Thursday night, or it was the night after we'd just won a game in Europe before the first league game of the season away to Motherwell. So the player of the year, now one of the four of us could probably not be that far away. The other three of us have had a fucking nightmare. So Greg's young player and player of the year. Player of the year, Kyle McGuinness.
Correct.
Young player of the year, Dan McKay. Me, player of the year. Now, I don't know if there's like a minutes played criteria to even get a nomination, but I went for Scott Allen, which was fucking ridiculous because for about the second game this season, I was like, get him the fuck. And then my young player of the year was also Dan McKay. Harry, you fucker. Harry, you went for Matt Macey to be player of the year.
Bill, because see, at the time, I remember I was saying to you, I'll try and put some variation on my answers because you and Greg agreed on everything. And then I thought, I've not annoyed Liam in a while, so I picked Matt Macey because I knew even back then
to Liam be fair, was too high on Matt Macey. I listened back to that episode today, Liam. I'm not going to call it an agenda, but the narrative had already started.
Well, against Macey?
Not against Macey, but just questioning his ability, mate.
I called that fucking in that Celtic game, and they had all the wee laddies and they put in goals. Even for that point onwards, I wasn't sure about him. Do you know what? It's the thing with Macey, not to digress, and I'm going to digress. But like, I think what I'm starting to see is like there's been a softening of the criticism of him over recent weeks and months. And actually now there's just the realisation that he's just not very good. Because like the statistics tell you he's not very good. Everybody else tells you he's not very good. And people are now realising that Macey isn't very good. So I think expectations have just lowered to the point where he's just not a very good goalie. He's not terrible. He's not brilliant. He's probably somewhere in that sort of average to below average bracket in terms of goalkeepers we've had.
Sorry. I think just thinking about what Liam's saying, I think JD Hibbs potentially tweeted our expected goals during the week, and also go listen to Long Bangers, which you've probably already done before you listen to us. They spoke about expected goals, and basically Hibbs conceded the amount of goals you would expect us to concede, which suggests your goalkeeper isn't making too many sort of match-winning saves from the goal-scoring point of view, which Matt Macey absolutely doesn't influence. We've been shite at that. So this season, the eye test works. But Harry, your young player of the year, I think should be a candidate, Stephen Bradley. He's probably had the best season of any youngster.
Any youngster, he's had the best season at the club, mate. Boy's phenomenal. I don't understand why he keeps on getting loaned. Do it. Get him in the first team. We were playing Jamie Murphy over him.
But Harry, Stevie Bradley hit the bar at Hamilton, so you knew he was going to be a superstar.
No, that's bullshit. He hit the bar after skinning three players at Hamilton. That's what he done. The boy's a baller. Get him in the first team.
Liam, you're the one that's probably saved these blushes. As predictable as anything, you predicted Ryan Poitras to be player of the year.
I predict Ryan Poitras for absolutely everything. Someone actually just get me a price on Ryan Poitras for Prime Minister at speed.
I think Liam predicting Ryan Poitras to score goals is worse than me nominating Kevin Nisbet for High B the Week every week last season. Oh, God. And your young player of the year, you say that at a time you went very boring and straight to the point off the back of his last season, Josh Doig. So, Harry, we'll come to you first. Let's be honest. Matt Macey and Stephen Bradley are only winning the awards. Who do you think or who got your vote for player of the year and young player of the year?
I think, being honest, I can't actually wait. It was a toss-up for me. I was annoyed at Ryan Porteous at the time because I think he'd just been sent off when I voted and it was like his third red... Because he's had three red cards this season, is it?
Two during games and one retrospective.
Oh, okay. And I was a bit peeved off with that, so I didn't vote Ryan Porteous. I thought everybody else was going to vote him anyway. And then it was genuine. I can't remember which one I actually voted for in the end, but it was a toss-up between Kyle McGuinness and Chris Cadden. Because I thought Kyle McGuinness was absolute gravy at the start of the season. And then I would have voted Mark Boyle, but he wasn't available for it, so I couldn't have voted him. And then I don't actually think I voted for Young Player of the Year. I voted for Jake Doherty's second goal as Goal of the Year.
Yeah, that's not what I asked. So Greg did provide us with his Player of the Year and his Young Player of the Year earlier. He went for Chris Cadden, Player of the Year, Ryan Porteous, Young Player of the Year. Liam, are you sticking with your two?
I think so. I think the only danger to Porteous is just because he's been available for more games and played more games. I think the only danger to him is Cadden, to be honest, for the Porteous season.
Porteous probably not get Player of the Year as well because he still came into that Young Player of the Year bracket, potentially. Like, just in terms of when people were voting.
I know. I just fucking hate that people consider a 23-year-old Young Player of the Year. I know you're still in the category, but, I mean, come on. I think I might have voted for Cadden, forgetting that I said Porteous at the beginning of the season, so I feel like I maybe voted for Cadden. I think Doig's a shooting, though, to be honest. He improved. He had a difficult start to season, Doig, but I think he improved greatly around about the period that Sean Maloney came in, either through his coaching or through sheer luck. He definitely improved. I think he's actually had, in all honesty, a solid season, not a spectacular season, but a solid season, which for Young Player of the Year, if you've played a number of games, he is still really young. It's probably enough for him to win the award, I would think.
Well, I remember I voted for Chris Cadden for Player of the Year. No, talking shite. I didn't. I voted for Lewis Stevenson as Player of the Year. I doubled down on what I'd been saying on here for the couple of weeks leading up to it. I think if you look across the board, I think Lewis Stevenson, when played, he's not played as much as anyone else. I think he's been our most consistent performer this season.
Nah, fair.
I would say Cadden was. I'd say Cadden probably most consistent.
Hey, I got shot down a couple of weeks ago for suggesting Cadden had went off the boil a little bit, so I'm just gonna keep that to myself. and I think I put Porteous for Young Player of the Year. I think I did. It was either Porteous or Doig. I can't remember. But no, I think Lewis Stevenson probably won't get close to winning it due to... Do you know, I don't think anyone's happy that Lewis Stevenson's had to have the season he's had, but the season he has had when played has been... I think you could argue that Lewis Stevenson's been man of the match in probably just about every game he's played this season.
I think I'd like to see him in it just so we can advance the conversation about when he's going to get a fucking statue built for him.
Good point.
Like modern day, like I know there's people who say this person, that person should have one first, but like as a modern day player, to made the number of appearances he's has with all the headwinds that he's had as a player, like all the changes in manager, all the circumstances that have been against him,
the amount of players that have had the chance to match his accomplishment of both trophies and have shat the bed.
So for me, like I there'd be not a single part of me would be gutted if he won the award.
No, absolutely not.
Sorry, quickly, just two more awards I wanted to hand out since we're being generous. First of all, I want to give Commentator of the Year to Cliff Pike, followed closely by the mute button. I also want to give Signing of the Year because nobody brought fans together quite like him. Reindeer Hot Dog, that's my man.
M0 Awards, special award to Reindeer Hot Dog. Like, Who's Hibs Twitterer of the year? Who's Hibs Tweeter of the year?
You know what? Just because he blew up that, like, I think he was... No, I was going to say Fattest Prickus, but he kind of blew up last year, didn't he?
Last year was Fattest Prickus.
We did win back-to-back winners. All right, let's be serious. We can put a poll up as well. We should all nominate someone from Twitter. I think that's fun. Harry, save it,
because we'll probably do an end of season award episode.
Well, if you're listening this far and you're on Twitter, get your coins in.
No, for pattern of the year, but like just actual like consistent Hibs content. We've mentioned JD Hibs already. Like fair play, he fucking knocks out a fair amount of interesting Hibs content. Deserves at the very least a pat on the back for that.
And what you got? The analysis guy as well. I've forgotten the numbers off the top of my head.
91-25.
Aye, that's the one. He's Barry good. As well. Like
he's good. Frank, who else? Hibs tweet of the year. Ryan Melville. Because he manages to keep it. He manages to keep it to 140 characters or less. When he doesn't do that when you're in person.
Oh dear, poor Ryan, man. Right, boys, do you know, this was really enjoyable and it's went on a hell of a lot longer than what I anticipated it was, so well done to anyone that's still listening. Again, I think we do appreciate it. I'm glad some people don't want to confirm that our podcast is absolutely shite, even though we generally do agree with that opinion when we get told it. But yeah, no. Thank you for joining me again, boys.
Please, would you give us a subscribe on YouTube?
Yeah, do you know?
We've only got 163 followers, and
you know what, right? We're a bit fed up and not making any money for this. So, see if you could just follow us on subscribe to us on YouTube. That'd be quite good, aye. So,
because some people have made us well aware. Some people have made us well aware that they get paid handsomely money for talking about Hibs. Good money for talking about Hibs. So, you know, if you want us to be in that same boat, let us know.
If you've no guess who we're talking about yet, it's about a 41-year-old man who spikes his hair up and gets blonde highlights.
Hey, and on that note, we are off, boys. It's been a fucking pleasure as ever. Catch you later. Bye.